Lisa.
Thank you. Hi, my name is Lisa. I'm an alcoholic. So, tradition four, I'm going to read the long form first. With respect to its own affairs, each AA group should be responsible to no other authority than its own conscience. But when its plans concern the welfare of neighboring groups also, these groups ought to be consulted. And no group, regional committee, or individual should ever take any action that might greatly affect AA as a whole without conferring with the trustees of the General Service Board. On such issues, our common welfare is paramount. So, you know, a little personal experience. When I came in, you know, if you made a little groan or you were like a little disappointed that we were speaking on a tradition, now I understand. You know, I wasn't familiar with traditions. I didn't know how to relate them to my sobriety or to my life. You know, and I kind of thought the traditions were something that, you know, the steering committee would, put in place, or, you know, maybe the group officers. You know, they were the ones that worried about the traditions, and I just focused on myself. But as... You know, as time went on, I started to realize, you know, this group and AA as a whole is really important to me. And as being so important to me and as being something I really want to protect and I really want, you know, to keep, I have to do my part and I have to be involved in making sure that the guidelines stand and that we're all acting as we should. You know, so basically with the fourth tradition, you know, we can't injure AA as a whole. And we cannot affiliate ourselves with anyone or anything else. You know, sobriety has to be our sole objective. You know, if we started calling ourselves, and I'm using these just as examples, if we started to call ourselves like, you know, the Republican group of AA or the Catholic group of AA, you know, that would take away from our ability to just focus on sobriety. And think of if you were new coming in or if you transferred from another state and you were coming to AA for the first time and you haven't been to that kind of meeting, you might have a hard time distinguishing whether you were, you know, coming to a political or religious meeting or whether you were going to a meeting that was focused on sobriety. You know, so with that said, we do have the right to be able to, you know, run our group as we should. You know, here we have a steering committee, we have a group conscience, and these trusted servants that we've put into leadership, they help us figure out how we're going to run our group. Like, for example, we decide to have an open meeting on Tuesday with a three-speaker meeting. Some meetings are closed, and they may have a round robin, and they, you know, may require that you share. In other meetings, we're able to share, and they're closed meetings. You know, some meetings are beginner's meetings, and we have a bunch of different, you know, ways in which we can express our sobriety. And, you know, throughout the years, I've been to so many different groups, and I've done service at different groups, I've done service here, and the best thing about it is I've gotten sober in every place. Like, each group and each place that I've been to has allowed me to have, you know, a different aspect of sobriety, and none of them have been better than the others. It's just been that they've all pretty much focused on the same, you know, the same primary purpose, which is just getting sober, which is what I needed when I came through the doors, you know? And, it, you know, it's easy, I think, if you're a big group and you have, you know, really good things going on, it can be easy to let, you know, ego get in the way. And, you know, they talk about in the 12 and 12, like the Middleton group, and that's kind of what happened when, you know, they had this grand vision for making this, like, I guess, like this kind of, like, super center where you could go and they would have education on one level and, you know, places for you to get sober and places for you to help you repay your debt. And the problem was is that people came and they weren't really sure what they were supposed to do. Some people came because they were lonely and they were looking for a place to go and they needed help getting their life together, but they may not have been alcoholics. And some people just came and they were excited about everything and they were just living at this super center. And ultimately, you know, it didn't work. And you know, they talk about, so this idea didn't work and we weren't able to you know, have that be something that was a good idea for us. But what it did give us was the ability to see, you know, ways that we could be wrong. And basically, the traditions came into place because we made a lot of mistakes and because there were things early on that we didn't know how to do, and everything was trial and error for us. You know, and there was a line that I found that Bill W. wrote, which was, implicit through AA's traditions is the confession that our fellowship has sins. We admit that we have character defects as a society, and these defects threaten us continually. So, you know, we have to focus on sobriety and only sobriety. You know, in all other aspects, we have the right to be wrong. And, you know, we have to humbly learn from our experiences. You know, and if we do fall short as a group, you know, we have to be willing to admit it and then do whatever is necessary as a group to, you know, make things right. You know, so because each group is autonomous, which is, you know, if you don't know, it's not controlled by others, it's independent, you know, we have to work together to avoid any harm that might, you know, cause AA as a whole any damage. So if we think that we might be doing something that would affect a surrounding group, we have to consult them. And if we think we're doing something that affects AA as a whole, we need to consult the General Service Board. You know, and it's also important to bring God into the traditions, whereas, you know, God wants us to consult each other in decisions that affect other people. You know, we can't be dictators, we can't tell people how to do things, we have to have a group conscience, and we need to seek other people's input in matters that affect everyone as a whole. And, you know, it's not always popular with others to stick to the traditions. You know, there may be ways that you would like to, you know, kind of skate the lines. There could be fun ideas, there could be different ways to maybe promote AA, and it has to be, we have to keep the discipline that we're going to stay, you know, stick to the traditions and make sure that our group stays intact. You know, and one of the things I found was that, like, the fourth tradition actually is a lot like the fourth step in that, you know, we have to, as a group, take honest inventory of ourselves. You know, we use the steps as a guide to our own sobriety. So the traditions are kind of our guide to AA, the main objective of AA as a whole. You know, to me, with the traditions, I had to really work at kind of applying them in my own life. So if you look at examples of, like, how you act in your day-to-day life, you can see where tradition four is necessary. Like, for example, I work for a bank, and they decided a few years ago, due to all, like, the fraud that was going on, that we were going to start sending out information encrypted. Now, this was kind of a pain for us who were sending out the information because, you know, the clients would get upset and they couldn't get into their information, they'd be calling, and, you know, early on, we kind of would slack off a little bit, and sometimes we'd just slip it out. We'd be like, oh, whatever, that nobody will know, we'll just slip that statement out, or we'll just slip this document out. And what started happening and it was that there started being fraud, and there started being, you know, emails and things that were withdrawing things from people's accounts because hackers were able to get into this. And so we thought we were trying to just skate by and make our jobs easier, but in the long run, we were affecting that bank as a whole. We had no idea how that was going to impact the whole structure of our, you know, our employment and our, like, bank. So it was one of those things where we all had to, like, regroup and really start being diligent about how we were conducting our affairs. And me personally, it was like, okay, so maybe it's not such a good idea for everybody as a whole if I don't take my job seriously. You know, and it can be the same thing. Like, let's say you have a couple of roommates and, you know, you don't tell them that you're spending the money for the cable bill and they're giving it to you, and then all of a sudden they come home and there's no TV. You know, you have to be honest and open with the people in your group or in your environment or in your department or in your household so that you can maintain that ability to, you know, have everybody be informed and be able to make decisions on that information. You know, and the greatest thing about AA that I've found is throughout the years, like, people really do adhere to these traditions for the most part, and it's great to see. Like, I know our steering committee, and I know the people that work in service in our group, they work so hard to protect these traditions because we didn't always have them, and we stood the chance to lose our, you know, our structure of AA. And to me, that's the most important thing that we keep. So as much as I didn't always think the traditions were such a big part of my sobriety, like, now I see how it's almost the the more important part of the sobriety, because if I don't have everybody here and I don't have these meetings and I can't come here and be with you guys and it can't be organized like this and we don't have great speakers and we don't have all the wonderful things we have, then to me, we really have nothing. So that's my sign. So thanks so much.
Our second 10-minute speaker is Jordan.
Hi, my name is Jordan, and I'm an alcoholic. Very grateful to be here. It really is an honor and a privilege to speak at my home group, which is the Atlantic Group, and in front of so many people, familiar faces, who have really helped me along the way, been tremendous advisors to me, people who I really, really, really deeply care about. And that is not new. I mean, I've cared about people for a very long time, family and friends. But what I've gotten here, the relationships, the love, the support, is something that I cannot really describe from up here. And all I can say is, for those who have felt it, you know what I'm saying, and for those who have not yet felt that love, that support, that connection, to those in this room and to the steps and to the literature, which I'll talk about, just hang around and you'll see. So I just want to thank Dev, wherever you are, for asking me to speak. I really appreciate it, and I'll just jump into it. I was a rambunctious kind of kid. For those who know me, it's not much of a surprise. I don't think I ever knew where the stop was, where the go was. I just kind of always went. And if you were older than me, I don't think I had any respect for age or wisdom. And if you were younger than me, then I don't think I had any respect for your naivety or your lack of experience. I just kind of went at my own speed. And it speaks to this in our book, in our literature, in the big book, about being a tornado and just running through life with little ability to reflect on how behavior is one impacting me and impacting those who I care about. So when I first came to this meeting, and I like visual diagrams, and I watched Pulp Fiction recently, and Uma Thurman does this like square move. Like, so picture, I can only picture my problem, which is this square, right? And once I remove alcohol from that, which is just like the corner, I have this whole big square left. And that's what I'm left with. And that's been my experience. And to work on me has been the greatest gift that anyone has ever given me. I drank at an early age. I grew up in northern New Jersey, not far, about 20 minutes from Manhattan. So I romanticized going out at a very early age, and I think I like acted like my basement was some sort of nightclub at a very early age. Come on down, let me check your ID, even though you were like 10, and your ID was your student pass. You were a safety. I couldn't wait to experience with alcohol and other substances, and I got into that at an early age. And I can early remember that the feeling that I received was a little abnormal, that by which I didn't really have any desire to stop. And we speak here about a progressive disease, threefold: physical, mental, and spiritual. At first, for me, it was just—I guess I just wasn't aware of the mental and spiritual aspect to this disease. But physically, once I put alcohol in my system, it was a different Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. I was Jordan, and then Mr. Some, whoever you wanted me to be after I put alcohol in my system, and I could be all sorts of shapes and colors and do all sorts of impressions. I mean, I could take on another personality, and that I really didn't want to let go from an early age, and I would do that until my body couldn't take any more. And I went to college at a big school down in Florida. Having drank a lot and used other substances during high school, so I went to college. I felt like I was already a pro. And there, and kind of the tail end of high school, things got, you know, there was some scary moments. You know, there was just the point where I think I mentioned that, you know, the body couldn't really handle much more, but the mind had no desire to let go. So I went through college and I graduated and I moved to the city and things got really bad. They got very scary, and I had some close friends who were very concerned and called me a DMW, as a dead man walking, because every time I saw them, I was just walking, having been up for several days. It was suggested to me that the way that I use is a little bit different from others, and I sought therapy, and which really didn't work. And then I checked myself into an outpatient, where then I started to learn about the disease of alcoholism, and it was suggested there that I start to go to AA meetings and get a sponsor and start working the steps. And that, to me, I was like, why would I ever do that? Why would anyone ever do that? Who does that? People do that? There's AA? I mean, as many have shared from this, Mike, people, you know, my only thought of it was what I saw in television and films. But I got to an AA meeting, and there I met my sponsor, who I knew from a previous big night, as we used to say, one of the last hurrahs, but which was strange, because when I saw him, I saw a guy that I used to use with, and he took me through the steps, and he had patience, and he cared for me, and he showed me love that I had not experienced before, and I knew he had my back, and I knew he had my best interest, and he took the time, and he answered my phone calls, and he introduced me to other guys who I met, and a fellowship was growing around me. And I met some amazing guys. I had some interim sponsors who became some of my best friends, who I'd be down in Florida, and they would be like, why aren't you at a meeting? Go to a meeting. You're not supposed to be calling me. You're not going to the beach. I mean, they were tough. But I appreciate their interest in my sobriety. Moving along, I came to a point in my sobriety where I needed a little bit of change. I met another sponsor who, again, asked me to make an agreement with him whereby I was fully committed. Half measures availed me nothing. I had to be committed to this program fully. And, you know, he asked me a number of questions, which I answered truthfully. And, again, the experience I had was magical. He asked me to read certain pages in our big book and in a 12 and 12, and I did it. I listened to everything he told me to do, and I continue to listen to the best of my ability to everything he tells me to do. And that's such a gift here. I can call this man at any time, and he's got a family, and he's got a big job, and he travels. I can call him. He picks up my phone, and he stops, and he listens to me, and he gives me his honest opinion, whether I like it or not. Like, whether it's good or bad, he just provides it. And he helps me free myself from what's going on between my own mind, the selfishness, the self-centeredness, the self-seeking, the fear. You know, we sat down, we did a four-step. Before that, I learned about God and trusting in God and relying on God. And having gone through the steps a few times, I had already felt the presence of something greater than myself by making an amends to somebody else, which was an amazing experience. But I continued to go through the steps with my second sponsor, and I wrote out a four-step, and I did a fifth-step, and six and seven, and actually right now I'm currently on an eighth-step. I made that list, and I'm sharing it with him now. So I look forward to continuing working these steps and growing every day. And I've had a psychic change by working these steps, by coming to these meetings. I'm so grateful for that we live in a city where we can get to so many meetings at many times of the day. And for all the folks in this room who have really helped me and have allowed me to help them by just being their friend and by just saying hi and just chatting. Again, I'm grateful to be here. I'm grateful for my sobriety. And thank you to this group. Thanks.